Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, good evening, good evening. Welcome to Leader in Motion Radio. My name is Christine LaPerriere, and for those of you calling in for the first time, I'm very excited to be with you this evening. Leader in Motion Radio, real quick, it's just to have these conversations about how to bring your most inspired, authentic, well-intentioned self to work. In today's very difficult work world, it gets tough sometimes to remember the principles and the values that we hold near and dear to our hearts and use those principles and values to guide us making decisions in the workplace. My name again, Christine LaPerriere, and I'm a channel partner with Miller Hyman. I work with sales organizations. I do a lot of coaching, a lot of facilitation, but I have an amazing passion for self-help and some spirituality and some of the things around principles and values and what make us tick. I really have a passion for that, so I like to see how we can marry that in the business place. Tonight, I'm really excited. This is my first international show, so I've got Bob Lank and Kathleen Lank coming on. Kathleen's calling from Seoul, Korea, which is really exciting. And today, what we're going to talk about is personal responsibility and choices. One of the things that's so neat about Bob, why I asked Bob to come and talk on the Leader in Motion Radio, was because to know him is to love him. He's really one of those people that when you're working with Bob, you see how he thinks about how to create win-win outcomes. I think a lot of people talk about what it is to have win-win relationships or to genuinely want the best intention for both parties involved in a relationship, especially in a business relationship. People say that, and I really am, I'm amazed to work around him because he lives that. He's my business coach through an organization that I'm involved in called CEO Global. It's a fantastic organization that helps improve the lives of executives and CEOs and their families and their companies. So he works with me along with many other executives trying to help us live our best business and our best personal life. Again, as a personal coach, he's just been very, very valuable to me in helping me see how to make very well-intentioned, very powerful decisions with my best interest and my customer's best interest at heart. So he's just been quite an influence in my life. With that, when I was talking to him about the idea for this show, he actually mentioned that Kathleen, his daughter, had observed many of the values and principles that he feels are important in business. She actually observed them as he was her dad. So she wrote a list, top 10 things I learned from my dad, and she shared it with him. It's an amazing list. As you start reading it, you start to realize that so many of the principles that he brings to the workplace, he must have been living at home. And I think that, in essence, that is what it is to be your authentic self. We talk about it all the time, and I think that's really what it is, to have that same authentic, principle-driven belief system that wakes up and it's part of you in your marriage and in your relationship with your children and your family, and it's also in your relationship in the business place and everyone you interact with. So I really feel that Bob encompasses a lot of these traits. So with that, I'm going to introduce Bob and Kathleen after that lengthy introduction. And what's really neat is I'm going to ask Kathleen actually to introduce herself and then start to introduce her father through these top 10 things that she's learned from him. Meanwhile, Bob's going to tell us, too, a little bit more about himself, and he's going to tell us about how those values not only showed up in his home life, but also showed up in the business world. So with that, I'll introduce you both. Kathleen and Bob, are you guys there?
Yes, we are.
Yes, we are.
Great, great. And Kathleen, with that, do you want to do a quick introduction?
Sure. I'll introduce myself very quickly. My name is Kathleen Lank. I've been teaching English in South Korea, working to help people with job interviews and presentation skills for the past 2 years. Previously, I was at McGill University, and I have a strong background in event planning more than anything else, and feel that a lot of my social skills, my ability to interact with people, has come from my dad. And as Christine said,
Great, thank you. And Bob, do you want to do a quick introduction?
Yeah, no, I wanted you both to keep going on and on about all these things.
I was going to say,
I'm amazed. I don't know who I owe what to, but we'll settle it up. Just quickly, my background was almost 20 years in consumer goods. I worked with Hallmark Cards. Great undergraduate business experience because you're really in the personal communications business, being at Hallmark. I moved from that to the human capital industry and did a lot of work in executive outplacement and different kinds of human capital coaching and ultimately executive coaching and executive search. I worked with the Rotman MBA School here in Toronto and work with a graduating student and have done so for 11 years. So it's interesting, in my CEO global life, I'm working with very senior people, often in the last period of their leadership roles, and I'm working, on the other hand, with brand newly minted leaders coming out of university. So I get a pretty unique view of those two ends of the spectrum.
Great, great. And with that, like I said, so I'm very excited. I have to ask, Kathleen, will you go ahead and, I guess, tell everybody some of the things that are on that top 10 things I learned from my dad list that were so amazing?
Mm-hmm. So I was raised by a man who always championed two things, choices and taking personal responsibility. And I feel that my dad has been very successful without ever losing track of, quote unquote, what is right. So I grew up surrounded by many catchphrases or kind of mantras that Dad always said, but I distilled them down into 10 around the time of his 60th birthday and sent that along to him. So I'll start with number one. We're going to work in a Letterman format here and move from 10 down to 1, actually. And number 10 was, it's important to match, meaning it's important to take pride in my personal appearance and to acknowledge the power of a first impression.
And I wonder if maybe I could just pick up off the tail end of that. I think there is some sense to the sequence here, so that's probably maybe not the top one, but it made the top 10. I think it's all about how you show up. And, you know, you hear the story, half the battle is just showing up for the meeting kind of thing. But the fact is that the energy that we give off and how people start to figure out who we are happens very, very quickly. And I've always thought people need to be paying more attention to some of the finer points as they interact with the world. And so how you show up is pretty important. Christina, there was one thought I just wanted to introduce overarching on everything we're going to talk about, if I may.
Sure.
And it's this quick story that some of our listeners may have heard. And it goes back, I guess, a long while ago when there was an Indian chief, and one of the young braves came up to him looking very puzzled and said to the chief, "I feel all the time like I've got two voices. I've got two wolves speaking in my ears, and one's kind of a good wolf and one's a bad wolf. And chief, you got to help me. I'm not really sure which one's going to win, so how will I know which one's going to win?" And the chief sort of sat back for a second, had a puff on his pipe, and said, "The wolf that will win will be whichever one you feed." And I've always liked that, only that this choice thing, our lives are made up of very small choices, kind of like that airplane that's off the direction it should be going for 90% of the flight, but somehow as it course corrects, it gets back on. And that's why even small things like first impressions and how you show up are very important, in my view.
And I think that piece around choice is really powerful, because one of the things that I'm studying a lot right now, just in my own practice outside of work, is the management of thoughts and the management of intentions. And you realize that every one of those is also a choice. And I think when we show up in the workplace, that choice to decide whether it's a Monday and it's going to be a terrible day, or that choice of whether to show up and be grateful for the opportunity to meet new people today and work with a great team, you know, that in itself is a choice. So I love that story. It just highlights that so well. Okay, in Letterman format, so number 9.
Number 9 is take care of your things. To appreciate the things that I'm lucky enough to have and to care for them accordingly.
And I think what is underneath all that, certainly at the tender age of 2 or 3, you don't want your kids leaving their bikes out in the rain. But as time goes on, it's take care of things. Now, things are not all hard assets. We've got hard and soft things. Sometimes it's taking care of family matters. Sometimes it's taking care of someone on your team that's going through a difficult time. But it's always about, again, paying attention to the things that are around you in life, including the planet Earth. I mean, there's more than just the hard part of things you leave in the rain. It's what's the footprint you're leaving as you finish eating at McDonald's or whatever those things are in your life. So taking care of many things.
I think that's great, and the appreciation to recognize what you have is such a forgotten principle in today's world so many times. Number eight is,
and this one, I can't even count the number of times I've heard this growing up, and it's not quite as typical as some of the others, and I think that makes it special. Number eight is honor among thieves. So to be loyal to my friends and allies, to solve problems without a third party, and to never, ever tattle on another person.
And what I like about that thought is, again, it's one of the kind of subsets of the personal responsibility. If you're having an awkward moment with another person, you own the responsibility as the one feeling that to try and correct it. So you've got to be ever open to hearing the other person's point of view. And I know in some of the earlier programs, Christine, I know you got talking about that servant-style leadership, that ability to put yourself in the other person's place and to really understand what it is that's got them so riled up, if that's the case, and to be able to put yourself in a secondary position, almost like you're watching yourself from a balcony and you're on the stage interacting with the person and you're also observing yourself in that interaction, because there's something that we're doing that's sending signals off, and you can only see it from getting a little bit further away from it.
And I think what's really amazing about that is that, again, sounds great in theory, and I think to live it is also, it takes a lot of attention to do that. I know you and I, we've had some coaching sessions where I'll be struggling with a client or trying to understand a conflict or a relationship, and I'm very much looking at it from my own point of view. And I think that's what makes you such a powerful coach at times, is that you really kind of take the zoom lens and you pull it away from the situation and you ask some really intelligent questions around what might be going on for that other person. And for me, you'll bring that awareness back to kind of having some empathy for what's happening in all sides of the situation. So, again, I think these all sound great in theory, but it's living them, and the fact that, how do you bring your attention to that on a regular basis is really the practice of this. So I think that's a great one. Number seven.
Number seven is, the only thing you hate is the word hate. As I was growing up, I believed that hate was one of the many four-letter words that I truly was not allowed to say. It was a swear word in my house. And God sort of always said that we needed to understand hate is too strong a word for any situation. Precious time is wasted hating anyone and also anything.
And again, kind of putting that in a business context, I think we've got to be very careful in how we choose our words. And the more senior we get in our business lives, or the more influential we become in our community lives, the more each word that we speak matters to the person receiving it. And I know, again, from a previous show, Christine, this idea of your word is your bond. So not only are you being careful of what you say, what you commit to, but if you do say it and commit it, you got to darn well make sure that you do it. Otherwise, don't say it. So it's attention to language.
Definitely, and it's funny, I'm reading Language in the Pursuit of Happiness right now by Chalmers Brothers, and he talks about how language creates and generates. It doesn't just describe. And for me, that was such a powerful thought, that language creates and generates. So I think to use the word hate is to create that kind of negativity in your world. You're actually creating that. So I think that's fantastic. Number six?
Number six is on time or early. Now, when I was growing up, my dad kept all of his clocks exactly 7 minutes ahead. And if we were, quote unquote, late for things, it meant that we were probably actually 5 minutes early for something. But he is never, ever late for anything. So this lesson was to show respect by honoring time constraints and to be the person who can be consistently relied upon to be there when I say that I will be there.
And I've got to kind of put this one at the feet of my father, who was an Air Canada captain. And, you know, he's down in Florida right now on Marco Island. But I will always remember the phrase, be on time early. And I think how I took that in a business context is being able to respect other people's time. And we've probably all had situations where we've had a boss or someone that does the old, if you're not on time, we close the door on the boardroom and you don't get in and you see everybody at the awkward coffee break that happens an hour and 15 minutes later, or maybe it's a professor that did that. Once that happens once, you don't have to worry about it again. But it all comes down to respect for other people's time.
And what I have to say is Bob's client, especially when you're paying him by the hour, I know that I can sneak in an extra free 15 minutes of coaching if I just show up early for my session, because he's always there. So that's my own little practice that I've learned in working with him. So it's great.
I'm seeing through all this now.
I was going to say, now you notice that I'm always there early and ready to start. Number five.
Number five is probably the one that makes me laugh the most and reminds me most of my dad, and it is, rules are general guidelines for the masses. So to comprehend that rules are designed to keep the world in order, but do not specifically always apply to me, and that they can often be easily interpreted or changed.
Yeah, this is a dangerous one. This is like giving a loaded pistol to a child, I think. But the fact is, it's most important in the business world and indeed most of life to understand what the rules are. And there may be times when the rules need to be bent. I don't think you stick to everything just because it's written down. But the overarching piece here is not to cause harm to anybody as a result of it. But I must say, I've lived most of my life interpreting some rules, and I've met some very interesting people, and I've found myself in a few interesting situations.
That's great. And I think, you know, it's interesting when I think of business, because I see many times the quote-unquote rules or procedures, when that drives things over logic or over the wellness of people, it creates really dangerous corporate culture, you know. So I think there's a lot to knowing that we work with human beings and that we need to make some intelligent decisions sometimes on the fly, independent of what the rules state. So I think that's great. Number four.
Yeah, the fourth one is, it never hurts to ask. So to be brave enough to ask for what I want and understand that the worst thing that can happen is a no as an answer, which would leave me no further back than where I originally started. So it's the bravery to just ask, and maybe, possibly, you'll get a yes.
Yeah, and again, for an individual who spent much of his life on sort of the sales and marketing side of the world, you know, no is just kind of where the selling starts, as everybody says. But I think the most important thing under this fourth one is to be extremely clear on what it is you're after, and whether that's being clear in a given meeting or a given personal interaction or your personal goals for the year, or whatever those things are. But clarity of outcome is so important, and I find so many times, even senior people, I kind of get lost in a conversation and have to go, time out. What exactly is it that you're hoping to get from this piece of conversation? So being clear about outcomes and asking and having those brave conversations where they're needed.
And I think I have to add to that, too, in my work as a consultant and working with sales organizations particularly, no is not personal. So a lot of the times I think, you know, like you said, having the clear vision of what your intention is in that moment and what you're trying to ask, and And the fact that no is actually not, is nothing personal if that is what the answer is. And a lot of the times I even recommend people ask that question that gets a no, because behind that there's a lot of interesting information. So even asking to seek to understand what that answer is also leaves new opportunity on the table for negotiation and getting closer to where you want to be. I think that's number three.
Third one, life isn't fair. To accept that sometimes things just aren't fair and to promptly get over it.
So I guess this gets spoken about in many different ways in the world of work, but it's basically to avoid the blame game, that if something happens, what is it I'm going to do as a result of what's happened? What was the learning in it that I should take away? And I'm not trying to minimize that bad things happen, because they do. But the fact is that it's probably the best past you're ever going to have. There's not a thing you can do about it. And to point the finger at the boss or your colleague or the economy or your husband or wife or your kids really isn't totally useful, because that gives all the power away to any of the people mentioned, and it would be better to say, so what is it about this situation that I now need to do? I think one of the most powerful phrases I've ever heard, and it's 10 two-letter words, simply states, if it is to be, it is up to me. So it's kind of from this moment forward, what is it that I'm going to do? And no, life is not always fair.
And you know, I think I have to say that this is one I wish I had implemented earlier, because I know, you know, especially when I first joined the working world, there were a lot of times where I didn't understand something, or I felt that something wasn't fair, or, you know, it was unjust. And I think there was a lot of, you know, times where that energy, it was, you know, it was in the back of my head. It was that story that would continue to play over and over again as I would look around the office and interact with people. And I think as soon as you start to have that story in the back of your head, it taints your intention, which is something that I'm really, really big on, is understanding, you know, how to have good intentions when you're working with other people. And it's tough to do that if you believe the story that something's not been fair. I have a sample of this in a time where I had a really difficult interaction with somebody that I really felt was unfair, and I remember deciding that I needed to pick a day and be done with it. And so I kind of picked this random, you know, Tuesday, and I let myself complain about it for a few more days, and as of Tuesday, it was forgiven and forgotten. So, you know, sometimes you do need a few days to vent. Pick your day and call it, you know, and promptly get over it, as Bob would say. Number two
is everything happens for a reason. And this was sort of brought to me in believing in the power of the universe. So that could be a religious belief. It could be a belief in karma. It could be, Christine, what you often talk about in terms of spirituality, so just bringing your best self to everything that you do. But it's a general idea to accept that no matter how seemingly devastating a situation, it's probably going to end up leading somewhere better, and it always gets better.
You know, it was my great privilege during my business life to work with, I guess I'd say hundreds without any exaggeration, hundreds of presidents, CEOs, and very senior men and women who were invited to leave their organization. And in the moment of that news being communicated, I can always remember the hurt or the disorientation or the numbness that occurred. And I would always find a way before we parted company within the first hour or so that they'd found out the news to say, you know, we'll talk about this later, but in the very greatest percentage of the people that I work with, when time moves along, people actually end up in a better place. It doesn't feel like that right now. That's fine. But I just want to plant the seed so that we can come back and have that conversation. And I was so often reminded by people, several people that would remember that, to say, you know, I heard that and I thought it was just a lot of, you know, what you guys say at a moment like this. Learned it from George Clooney. But in fact, it really is true. Unfortunately, some time has to pass. And it's like Christine said, sometimes you can pick a date and other times it takes a little longer. But we have to remember that it takes a great deal of heat to make steel, and sometimes it gets pretty hot.
I think that's great, and, you know, it's funny. I always say everything happens for a reason, and after, you know, maybe on some of the worst days of some of my friends and family as they were, you know, about ready to throw something at me, I added to everything happens for a reason, and at this moment in time, I don't understand that yet. You know, it's a mystery still to me, but everything does happen for a reason. And I think sometimes in the moment when you get that bad news or when, you know, when you feel like things are really falling apart, if you can commit to everything happens for a reason and maybe I'm not supposed to know right now what that reason is, you can find a lot of peace in following this principle. And finally, drum roll, item number one.
Item number one is do the thing you've never done. So valuing life experience as education and to always choose the unfamiliar path when you reach the fork in the road. I have been raised with this and truly use this mantra in absolutely every decision I make, from going out for dinner and choosing the restaurant that I haven't been to yet, to bigger decisions like choosing where to live. Don't return to the same place you've already lived. Why not try somewhere new? And I find that it's led me to a lot of exciting experiences and, more importantly, has allowed me to meet and interact with a greater range of people.
Yeah. Hey, Kathleen, you might explain where you're headed next after Korea, speaking of.
Yeah, well, I lived in the UK, so then moved to Korea, decided going back to the UK, which was at one point an option, didn't seem to follow mantra number one, do the thing you've never done. So I am now moving off to Australia in, my goodness, a week now.
Yep, fabulous. Give your mom and dad a new place to visit. And I think the interpretation of this, do the thing you've never done, and I must say I'm glad to see Kathleen made it number one because it's been primary in my lifetime. It speaks to things like lifelong learning, that we never, ever finish getting it. We should walk around like a question mark, not an exclamation mark in our life to absorb new experiences and new people. And, you know, I've kind of recommitted to that whole notion of new experimentation this year. I try and always have a theme for the year, a bit of a battle cry. And for me, that's what it is. And so let's not keep all of our bucket lists and whatever in the bucket. Bring them out, give them the light of day, express them to people who matter to us so they can keep us honest on them. Because we're only on the planet for so long, and boy, it's a rich life when you go out and grab it, and it's all around us.
That is great. This has been absolutely so much fun to go through these, and I know we've just got a half-hour show. Bob, when you think of the fact that you were able to influence your daughter, and, you know, she's living, breathing these principles that you instilled in her, probably through what she actually watched you do and listened to what you said. Do you have any takeaways for people that are listening right now?
Yeah, two things come to mind. First of all, around this personal responsibility we spoke about, it's so much of it's in our power. And the fact is that we're going to make good and bad choices every day. But I think the touchstone on the choices side comes down to this, that if I could invite the listening audience to consider, if you were to sit down with a blank piece of paper and you were to create your own top 10 that you would wish perhaps your kids or your spouse or someone important to you to write down on your behalf, if you could, what would they be? So it's living life with more clarity and more intention. Because I never put these down on a piece of paper. Kathleen was good enough to do it the way she did. But I often ask myself the question, you know, if I could rewrite it all, are these the ones? And certainly to the listening audience, to actually become very clear on what are those things that you stand for and not have them happen by accident.
I think that's fantastic. So This went by way too quick. Kathleen, thank you so much for calling in from Seoul, Korea. That is it's amazing. So I know this is just starting your day. But and Bob, thank you so much. I almost feel like we're going to have to do a series because this was too much fun and it just went by too fast. I don't think everybody even understands all the wise things that you've taught me. So we might have to do a sequel. But thank you both so much for calling in, and we'll wrap that up as our episode of Leader in Motion Radio. Thank you so much. Have a good night.
Thank you.
Good night, everyone.
Night.